Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Hello there. Hope everyone is doing well, settling in, and ready to talk about boundaries. That's what we're talking about on this show, the need for them, how to establish them, and how to communicate your expectations for them. Creating and maintaining healthy boundaries is all about communication. It starts with you and it ends with you, so don't forget that. We would all like to be free to nurture our mind, body, and spirit without the fear of attack. Boundaries give you space and freedom to safely move around and grow. So, imagine, if you will, a hula hoop. We're going to use this visual to demonstrate space, not literal space, but figuratively. You are in the center of your hula hoop. You have free space all around you before you hit the edge. Comfortable there? Good. Stay in your hula hoop and we will work through keeping everyone else in theirs. Ready to build fences instead of walls? You might have heard the topic for this show and thought, yep, that's me. I need clear boundaries more than anyone. Or you could have been curiously stumped, thinking things might not be going very smooth and it wouldn't hurt me to explore this boundary concept. Well, both ideas are welcomed. Even if we are aware of the fact that we need to create and communicate more boundaries in our life, chances are we aren't even fully aware of our true needs. Many times, life is just out of balance and we can't seem to put our finger on any one cause. We always seem to get the raw deal after going out of our way to help everyone else. In relationships, we're always giving so much of ourselves only to be left disappointed. We are the go-to person for everything, family, friends, coworkers, but yet, no one is there for us. Why does this keep happening to us? Do we have some sign posted on our forehead that says, I'm nice, please take advantage of me? Do you connect with any of these statements? There might be a logical explanation and answer to your conundrum. It may be a little tough to hear and even hard to swallow, but hasn't that been your experience on this self-discovery journey? The answers have been right in front of us. We just had to get to a place of acceptance instead of defiance. We've had to accept that we've played a much bigger role than we originally thought. And this is no exception. You communicate through your actions how you want to be treated and how you plan to treat others. Let me repeat that. You communicate through your actions how you want to be treated and how you plan to treat others. Let's dive into this concept because it's really two-sided. First, let's talk about how you want to be treated. Remember when I said it starts and ends with you? Think about the way you treat yourself. Words you use to describe yourself. I'm always late. I'm fat. I'm not smart enough. I never win. I stink at relationships. I'm a loser. Having this type of narrative is not just what you tell yourself in the privacy of your own mind, but it oozes out of you as your aura. How can you present a calm, confident, positive energy with this type of negative self-talk? You can't expect people to think highly of you when you don't even think highly of yourself. What about the actions you take to nurture yourself? You don't set aside time to take care of your basic needs. your appearance, health, spiritual needs. Your life is chaotic, running around trying to be there for everyone. Something is always going wrong. You're down on your luck, and you see no way out. These aren't feelings that you struggle with in private, but this is what you present when you're around others. Your life seems like it's always out of control. How would someone feel comfortable asking for advice or confiding in you when you can't manage your own life? Would you like to be treated differently? Start by treating yourself differently. The second side of this two-edged knife, how you plan to treat others. If you don't want to be taken for granted or feel like you're shouldering the pressures of the world, stop raising your hand. When you always go the extra mile to get there first, you will soon find out you're the only one in the race. Now that may sound funny, but let's really think about that. If you always do everything for everyone, then they will become comfortable with your level of participation. This will naturally take the pressure off of them, so they will pull back, allowing you the space to do it all. Eventually, you realize you are doing it all and you become resentful, feeling you've been taken advantage of. Now, who's to blame? Should they have taken you for granted? Should you have set that level of expectation? Imagine a horizontal line. You can also imagine a football field, if you will. Draw a vertical line at the midway point. That would be the 50-yard line. Now, there is 50% on either side of the field. If you go over the line, doing your 50 and then 30 more, you can put your marker at 80%. That leaves 20% left for the other person to do. I don't know about you, but 20% is a cakewalk. 100% reward with only 20% effort? That's something anyone could get comfortable with. The big question is not why are people taking you for granted, but why you feel the need to do 30% more. Helping and giving are character strengths, as far as I'm concerned. But sometimes our helpful intentions give way to dysfunctional helping and giving. The solution isn't to stop helping altogether. It's to set boundaries when telltale signs of unhealthy helping appear. I found an article by Dr. Sean Byrne with 12 signs that you're giving too much. Number one, it's increasingly obvious that your help and giving fosters dependence, irresponsibility, incompetence, or poor character. Sometimes we have to face the fact that our good intentions have gone bad. Continuing to help and give under these conditions is a waste of our resources and isn't really helpful. Remember, healthy helping promotes other people's growth, independence, and the development of their positive potential. Unhealthy or dysfunctional helping does the opposite. Use your helping energies and resources to help people and causes that will truly benefit from your help. Number two, the other person has violated numerous agreements, required many bailouts, and hasn't used the help that you've given them to do as promised. At this point, it's time to stop believing them and giving them chances, at least for now. Once you get strong evidence that they are ready to use your help in the progress of life, you might want to help them again. When people use your help to escape responsibility over and over again, it's best to summon the strength to terminate your helping. Continuing to give to people who don't uphold their end is a waste of your time and resources. If you continue, you'll become increasingly angry and resentful. Number three, the help or giving helps someone to stagnate or become stuck in an age-inappropriate stage of development, or prevents them from developing needed life or professional skills. You can be too helpful, and in the process, create people that can't take care of themselves or do their jobs well. Unhealthy helping can doom others to be less than they are capable of. Healthy helping promotes others' independence and life progress. It doesn't retard it. Number four, your helping or giving requires your dishonesty or somehow compromises your integrity. For example, making bogus excuses for another or covering for another are almost never forms of healthy helping and giving. Healthy helping doesn't typically involve deception, secrets, or nor does it require that we violate our moral code. Number five, you have the distinct impression that you're being manipulated into helping or giving. Sometimes it's obvious, such as when the other says things to trigger your guilt and then conveniently offers a giving opportunity that will reduce your guilt. Sometimes it's only a feeling in your gut warning you that someone and their requests for your assistance are just a little off. Manipulation is a sign of someone who is willing to be deceitful and take advantage of others, and you should pay attention to your warning system, i.e. your gut. The odds of your giving being short-term and having a positive outcome are probably close to zero. Number six, your help is increasingly unsustainable given your resources. Look for that positive, helping sweet spot where you can help without sacrificing your own physical or mental health, your self-respect, or your financial well-being. Be willing to back out of negative helping arrangements that sap your resources. Decline to rescue and help when you really can't afford it. Healthy helping means helping within your means. Number seven, after helping or giving to someone, the relationship with the person has deteriorated due to bad feelings involving the helping or giving relationship. Healthy helping and giving have long-lasting positive effects on a relationship. Unlike unhealthy helping and giving, it strengthens a relationship and isn't fraught with relationship imbalance, conflict, hurt, or resentment. Number eight, your helpful accommodations make it easier for someone to remain physically unhealthy, putting off getting professional help, avoid taking their medication, or working their program. Admit when another's problems or challenges are bigger than you and require professional assistance. Withdraw help and giving that makes it easier for someone to avoid empowering themselves and managing their own condition. Recognize when your help wears down another's discomfort just enough that they're unmotivated to seek the professional help they really need. Instead, help by connecting them to relevant resources and appropriate professionals and supporting their motivation to seek treatment, working on their treatment program, doing physical exercise, sticking to their medically prescribed diet, taking medication, using the strategies they've been taught to manage their condition, etc. However, accept that they might not manage their condition as you think they should, and that is their choice and their life. Number nine, your help or giving in a group setting fails to inspire a cooperative group culture where everyone helps one another. Instead, it leads others to slack and leaves you feeling taken advantage of. When you see this, pleasantly announce that you are pulling back and making room for others to step up, assist with skill development, show them how to do things they might not have learned due to your over helpfulness, and then get out of the way. Number 10, you find that what you intended as a one-time modest offer of help or giving has morphed into an unending long-term obligation that you resent and find burdensome. This is a sign of helping and giving entrapment. Remind yourself that your past helping does not serve as a commitment to help forever. You didn't commit to this. Had you known it was going to go this way, you would not have agreed to do this. So you're not violating your commitment or being a bad person by backing out. Number 11, you're in a self-sacrificing relationship that reeks of codependence. It's one-sided, and closeness is based on one person's being a giver and the other an under-functioning taker. Much of the love and intimacy in the relationship is experienced in the context of the one person's distrust or poor functioning and the other's rescuing or enabling. Or the relationship is mostly about one person's excessive giving and the other person's excessive taking. Number 12, you're willing to overlook the ill effects of your helping and giving because it makes you feel like a good person. You should pull back from helping. That isn't truly helpful to the recipient and is more about you proving to yourself or others what a good person or family member you are, how selfless you are, or how nice you are. You've got it twisted, so it's time to re-engineer. No pain, no change. If you're still telling yourself, yeah, but, hit the rewind on the podcast and let's review it again. Drama doesn't find you. You lead drama to you. So if you truly want to change your circumstances, you have to change your narrative. You have the power to re-engineer your approach and set healthy boundaries. Now, I purposely didn't say re-engineer your relationships. The unfortunate side effects of no boundaries is you've created an unrealistic relationship expectation that many are comfortable with. It doesn't mean you shouldn't try to set a boundary and clearly communicate it with your current relationships. However, there will be some who are not interested in giving 30% more. And for those, you may have to say goodbye. Reengineering and clearly communicating your boundary is building a fence. Coming to this realization and severing all relationships and communication is building a wall. It's important to be aware of both responses because revelation can hit you like a brick, and all of a sudden, it's crystal clear. You might become so frustrated by the lack of personal success in your life that you decide to torch it all and start over. I mean, doesn't that sound easier than re-engineering? No. Some of the people in your life are just waiting for you to take control and will gladly step out of your way. Each relationship needs to be evaluated individually so you don't get in a rush and grab the matches. Dr. Sherry Jacobson wrote an article called How to Stop Giving Too Much in a Relationship. It's something that we should all consider. Think about this. Chart your giving. Spend 3 days, or better yet, a week, writing down each and every time you give your time and energy to other people. It can help to set an alarm to go off every few hours, and then you do a check-in with your notepad. Record how you felt when you agreed to give, how you felt after you gave, and how much time you spent giving to the other person. Ask yourself the following and record your answers. Approximately how much time did you spend on doing things for others? What giving did you enjoy, and what giving left you feeling depleted? What sorts of environments did you tend to give too much in? Home? Work? What sorts of moods led to overgiving for you? What could you have done instead of the activity you did for someone else? How about spot the need? For each time you gave in your giving chart, what might the hidden need be? For example, I proofread my colleague's report because I wanted her to like me. Or, I had sex with him or her because I wanted them to stop being mad at me. What are some other ways you could have used to get your needs met? The truth about giving too much in a relationship is that we're often actually manipulating the other person. We're overgiving instead of having the courage to ask for our needs to be met or engaging in healthy communication. Let's dig down to the core belief. Negative core beliefs cause fear and anxiety around saying no. As assumptions you have mistaken as truth, core beliefs tend to look like, if I don't give, I won't be loved. I'll be abandoned. I'll be worthless. Saying no can be the elephant in the room and create an awkward exchange if you let it. But effectively saying no can be one of the most gentle boundaries that can be appreciated by both parties. First, let's get comfortable with the word as we set some guidelines. No lying. No excuses. No emotions. No defenses. No negotiations. No buts. Just no. You are asked for something that you don't want to do or give, and you respond, I would love to help you out, but I just can't. Silence. That sounds like fun, but I can't make it. Silence. I would really like to be there for you, but I will have to say no. Silence. By being clear and decisively answering the question, you established your boundary. When you make excuses, negotiate, or end with, but, you leave the door open for discussion and manipulation. The biggest hurdle is the feeling of disappointing someone, but in all honesty, disappointing yourself should be your number one concern. When you say no, it frees the person asking you to set their sights on another alternative. When you bend or recant, it keeps them pounding and probing until they get the answer they want. Learning to say no takes time. The best first step here is to always ask for time to think. So don't feel the need to be so responsive that you don't have time to consider all your options. Giving yourself space and time can help you focus on your own wants and needs instead of a quick yes to make someone else happy. How about flip your reasoning? Write down the worst thing that can happen if you say no to this person or this experience. Write down the exact opposite. Come up with three facts that prove both your original thought and then the opposite. Come up with a thought that is exactly in the middle. Okay, see if you can follow this example. My boss will think I'm lazy and fire me. My boss will think I am assertive and promote me. He felt I didn't do well on another project. My annual rating was average. Three people were fired this year. He liked my last presentation. He didn't fire anyone off our team. I can't be fired for something not in my job description. Balanced thought in the middle. I might annoy my boss because he'll have to find someone else, but I won't lose my job over this. How about practice being uncomfortable? Here's the thing. With learning to say no and setting boundaries, it will feel very odd at first. You're breaking past old beliefs into new territory. Instead of giving up, learn to accept the discomfort as a sign of personal growth. A great tool for handling discomfort is mindfulness. If you feel anxious and sick in your stomach that you're about to say no, then take 10 minutes to sit and fully experience that feeling. Notice where in your body you feel discomfort, what other thoughts rise up, and see how the feelings can shift if you just notice them. Build a support team. Reach out to those you fully trust and ask them to check in with you when you're about to overgive. Or ask them to call and make sure you set boundaries when you said you would. Your accountability partner is interested in your success. Let them know your concerns and what triggers you so that they can help keep you accountable. Remember, this is a deeply rooted and compulsive behavior that you can get control of. Becoming aware of the patterns and understanding your responsibilities mean you take the necessary steps to change your behavior. Want some personal advice? Take it seriously. There is no way that you could live your life repeating this behavior and not see a pattern. Take responsibility. You have to own your role. You are not a victim, but a survivor and a thriver. And then take action. Do the work, whether that is to research and read up on the warning signs and possible solutions, or have some hard talks with the people that you love. You deserve to be free from this feeling. I was told to read the book Codependency No More by more than one professional, and I disregarded the advice. As a result, I suffered a lot of unnecessary anguish and heartache. Listen to your friends and your accountability partner for honest feedback. Doing it all is not something to brag about. Being the only one in a relationship that is keeping it together is not winning. An article by Dr. Abigail Brenner on creating healthy boundaries with others. I like some of her advice. A healthy relationship requires the space to be yourself and to maintain your personal integrity. Most people will respect your boundaries when you explain what they are and will expect that you will do the same for them. It's a two-way street. Not so with people who don't understand where you end and they begin. Chances are, people who try to invade your space are not thinking about you or how pushing the limits of your boundaries will affect you. They clearly feel entitled to get whatever they ask for, whatever they think they need, because of course, their needs are more important than yours. How do you know if your boundaries are being crossed? Generally, there are a few broad categories that compromise boundary violations. Verbal, psychological, emotional, and physical. Ethical, spiritual, and moral boundary violations exist as well. Verbal violations include not allowing you to speak or be heard, raising their voice and/or screaming at you, saying things that are derogatory or inflammatory about your integrity and character, even gossiping about you. Psychological and emotional boundary violations might include preying upon your sense of self and self-esteem, using what you've told them in confidence against you, lying to you, criticizing, demeaning, judging, or manipulating you, making fun of you, your thoughts, your feelings, your beliefs, trying to make you feel guilty or responsible for them or a situation, making demands of your time and your energy, shaming or embarrassing you, bullying you, or assuring you that their thoughts and beliefs are superior to yours and more important than yours. Physical violations include moving into your personal space, touching you without permission, being inappropriate or too familiar, especially sexually, touching or handling things that belong to you, violating your privacy like your cell phone, computer, social media, contacts, personal records, damaging or destroying your personal property, or threatening you with physical harm. While admittedly it may take involvement with several different people over a period of time, eventually getting the hang of who you want to be in your life and understanding who respects you and your space as opposed to people who are out for themselves or otherwise toxic. Here are some tips in the meantime to help you navigate your way to your goal of establishing healthy boundaries. Know yourself. Get to know yourself as best as you can. This means that you need to learn what's really important to you, what you really value apart from anyone else. Gaining access to your inner world by becoming familiar and comfortable with your own beliefs, emotions, feelings, and ideas are essential. The intimacy you experience within yourself serves as your own personal relational barometer. The better you know yourself, the better you're able to understand and choose those significant others that best mirror the kind of life experiences you have. Take responsibility for yourself. This means to become aware, to develop the capacity for active, conscious involvement, to know what needs to be done for yourself. By setting your own boundaries, you're telling others how you want and expect to be treated. In other words, you're setting your limits about who can come into your space and what you expect of others once they're there. How you want to be spoken to, touched, and treated psychologically and emotionally. Whatever you say goes, no matter what others may think, feel, or believe. Remember, you are not responsible for the feelings, actions, and beliefs of others, or for the way they react to the boundaries you've set. Develop a healthy respect for yourself. All of your experiences, including the mistakes you've made, have helped to shape your character, who you are. No one besides you, no matter how persuasive they may be, can define you or try to control who you are. When you respect yourself, all of who you are, you should expect that others will treat you with respect. If they don't, there's a clear sign not to engage. Heed the warning signs. Stay away from anyone who has their own agenda and thinks that nothing of pushing the limit or invading your space for their own end. This is not a hard thing to recognize since there's usually not much subtlety involved. In fact, the more you resist their attempts to engage you in a way that's best for them, the more obvious, desperate, insulting, and shrill they may become as they try to up the ante. Listen up. Don't try to fix people. Fixing others is a way of trying to get love, attention, and validation. Getting love, attention, and validation must mean you're okay, right? It's a waste of your time and energy to try to fix them because bottom line, they're not interested in becoming any other way than they are today. You are in charge of your choices. You have the right to change your mind and your direction at any time on your journey. You don't need to feel that you owe anyone anything more than you want to give with your own free and conscious heart. Anyone who mistreats you is disrespectful of your wishes, refuses to hear you, and has no intention of changing their troubled mind. Be ready to walk away without fear or guilt and don't look back. Separate yourself from others. It may be difficult to imagine being emotionally attached to others while remaining psychologically and intellectually detached. This means that you're able to separate your thoughts, feelings, and beliefs from others. You understand that your boundaries are different from theirs. This detachment creates enough room for physical and mental space between you and others that allows for your own personal expression while minimizing emotional and psychological entanglement. Gaining a healthy perspective of others without creating conflict within yourself is the goal. So, let's get back in our hula hoops, your own personal safe space. Here you are in control of what you say and do. You decide when to say yes and when to say no, and your answer is based on your own wants and needs. When you feel your perimeter weakening, remember, change comes from within. Only you can clearly and consciously communicate your boundaries. When you feel yourself overextending and putting yourself last, remember, get back in your own hula hoop. They have their own to take care of. I hope you've been able to pick up some healthy nuggets to add to your toolbox on this journey to self-discovery. It is important to build healthy boundaries, but build those fences instead of walls, because as you learn and grow, you can take down some of those defenses and really open up lines of communication in a healthy way when you feel strong and in control. It's important to take care of yourself and see that your level of giving might be a little bit too much and unhealthy for you. Learning to say no is such a wonderful gift for you, the giver, and also the receiver. It's important to create a decisive line of communication. So the more that you can practice that, try it with your accountability partner. Do a little role play. Get comfortable with saying no in a gentle and kind way. If you want to share Encouragementology with a friend who needs to know they are not alone in this journey of self-discovery, you can visit encouragementology.com or anywhere you stream your content to receive this episode and all others. Follow us on Facebook for additional encouragement throughout the week. I challenge you, look in the mirror to come face to face with your own wants, needs, and desires. Change your narrative and realize you are worth the effort. Lead by example and communicate a healthy boundary that uses fences instead of walls. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges.
I stumbled through until the path was clear. That's when I found you. How I wound up here.